Hello and welcome to the second episode of Clarity On. Today I'm back again. I'm Cyber. I was here last time in the episode about the new pension legislation. And today I'm joined by Angus, who is our CEO.
Morning. I'm the CEO at Clarity and also one of the advisors. So hopefully that sort of double perspective will help on the subject matter.
Yeah. And today it's Clarity On the three pillars of cash.
Clarity On is brought to you by Clarity, experts in strategic financial planning and investment management. With over 25 years of experience in the field, our award-winning team are well positioned to help people navigate the complex world of finance.
So today's conversation is one of your favourite topics. I know I've heard you talk about it quite a few times in the office, and it's one of the underlying factors that you always introduce to clients, as well as everyone else in the company. Because cash is the bedrock of effective strategic financial planning, as a brief introduction of the three pillars of cash philosophy, how would you describe it in terms of how important it is for someone to have the basic understanding of this?
Well, I think what's happened in the last few years actually is a very good example of why this subject is fantastically important for all clients. Without going into the details of all the pillars themselves, essentially the concept is to make sure you've got a fighting fund in cash available to you when certain curveballs come your way. Some might be planned curveballs, some might be unplanned. It's making sure you've got that war chest to avoid you having to go out and sell investments or other assets at a loss to produce cash in those times.
Okay, so for anyone that isn't aware or hasn't read our article online, there are three pillars. The first pillar being emergency, the second being income, and the third being capital. So if we start with the first pillar of emergency, which we would typically think of as your emergency fund, is that the first step that you would take in when you're looking at the overall outlook of your cash holding or what's in your bank account? Or would you maybe think, okay, I can look at the emergency cash later and focus on what capital and income I need? Or would you say first basis is always emergency cash?
I would say first base is that emergency cash, such an important anchor around which all the other planning is done. I would probably extend the naming convention from emergency to emergency or emotional level.
Okay.
Because for some people, whilst you might calculate an emergency level of cash need, they might have an emotional one that's higher than that.
Yeah.
I.e. they don't feel comfortable having less than X in cash, no matter what the mathematical parameters that sit below. And it's important to recognise that. So okay. We always say it's the higher of those two numbers.
It is a very emotional, I think money in general is a very emotional subject that a lot of individuals don't take into account until maybe a serious situation happens and you're thinking, oh no, I don't know if I have enough for this, or this is really now stressing me out. But, and you might be financially very well off, but you can still have that thought of, I don't think I have enough prepared on the side. So if we look at it from two perspectives, as someone that is younger, maybe in their late 20s to early 30s, maybe have a young family, and then we have a perspective of someone that may be older, you know, their 40s to 50s, they've worked for a bit, they're starting to look at retirement and plan a little bit more ahead, they've got older children, maybe going to university. We look at those two spectrums in terms of emergency and emotional cash. Is there a difference that they may have in priorities? Is that something that maybe the younger generation should focus more on as opposed to the older generation? Or do you think it's just the same for everyone involved?
I think the core mathematics are the same. The core concept is the same. But one must recognise that each of those examples that you've given, people, you know, at the young age, young couple, trying to build their careers and value, maybe buying a house, whatever that may be, compared to the sort of more midstream in the throes of education costs and other, all you'll find is actually they've got different priorities at that point in time. Mm-hmm. They've got different elements that affect their life in terms of pluses and minuses. But the essential protection and that foundation stone of emergency cash is broadly under the similar thought processes. And that is, if you can't think of any other number, to look at approximately 6 months of your outgoings.
Okay.
Now, in your first example, that would be a smaller number probably than the ones who have children in education and so on and so forth. But that's your starting point, is having always at least 6 months expenditure. So you can cope with maybe a loss of work for 6 months while you find a new job. You might have increased costs due to everything going up, which is the case at the moment. And you might use some of that fighting fund to help you out for the next year or two. But 6 months is a good anchor number.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable, considering if you think about, I know some people that I know will think before they buy something, maybe a nice pair of trainers, or they're treating themselves for their birthdays, and they think, if I can't afford to buy this four times, then can I really buy this right now without dipping into my savings and things like that? And I've always thought that's quite interesting that people do. But I guess it's, in a way, it's sort of a little outline, and they actually are thinking about their emergency fund that they don't want to touch at the moment. So I guess people just have a different way of looking at it, whichever way makes them feel comfortable, because I guess it's not the nicest thing to think of, if I need an emergency fund, because you never want to think about having an emergency. If we now go to the income pillar, is this just income from all aspects? So if you're renting a house and you're getting income from there, or just income from just your salary that you would consider in this instance?
Well, it's almost thinking of you, if you're with someone in a shared relationship of any description, mm-hmm. where you share assets, you're almost thinking of you like a business. You know, what money's coming into the business, and what expenditure do we have out of that business? So it's all the money in, money out, and taxes one big out.
Yeah.
But as we're finding, you know, mortgage costs shooting through the
everything's on the
roof. As much as they are, you know, there's a lot of strain on expenditure. So you might get to a situation, even during your working career, where your income is not quite matching your expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're having to go into that emergency fund to draw on it to help supplement for a year, two or three. Maybe there's not enough there, so you need to put aside some more money. And that's the idea of another pillar. So let's take an example. Imagine someone is short from income minus expenditure. You know, mm-hmm. the money in and out is not equaling each other, not able to save. But you're £1,000 a year worse off. You're in the negative. You need £1,000. We would often say you need to keep 2 or 3 years of that money in cash in addition to your emergency pot.
Okay.
So that now the second pillar is complete. So 2 or 3 years of your expected deficit, as we call it, the financial word, or the minus sign in your accounts.
Okay, so if we think about it in terms of bank accounts, you've got your emergency cash bank account, which you don't want to touch. It's there on the sideline and you don't want to think about dipping into it. And then you've got another savings account, inventory, and that is any extra cash from your income that you've put away just in case you do need to dip into it. You know, you've got extra bills 1 month, or, you know, you've had your MOT and you need a new tire, things like that. And you can just pop into that and you're all fine and dandy for that point of view. But as you've mentioned, with the cost of living crisis, a lot of individuals are finding this more difficult to do, and they're finding, okay, do I pay for this month, or do I need to, you know, stop my Netflix subscription? And I think I can't buy my coffees this month. And I think it's becoming harder for individuals to figure out how they now do this without constantly dipping into that emergency income pot or their emergency cash fund, and they're trying to stick within that salary. So do you think it's okay to be a little bit more relaxed when you're thinking about this, so you're not constantly stressed out? Like, to just give yourself that leeway of, okay, I don't need to be so strict with this, I can dip into the extra income pot for now.
Yeah, and in a sense, that's what the extra income pot's for. If I think I have this excess of expenditure because of bills going up, whatever that may be, and I do think it's £1,000 a year, I keep that £3,000 in that second pillar because I expect to use £1,000 a year, not because I'm going to keep that one for a rainy day.
Mm.
The rainy day has arrived.
Yeah.
And I've done the maths over the next 3 years to say that I will use that. I expect that account to go to zero. That's what it's there for. The emergency one is the one you want to try and not touch. But some people would treat the bills at the moment as an emergency.
Yeah.
They haven't thought about the income deficit pot because they didn't know it was going to happen. So that's when your 6 months foundation stone that you've got in there becomes useful. You dip into it. You know, do accept that this might be an emergency with your bills going through the roof, because hopefully it will be better in a year, 2 years' time.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to top up your cash emergency reserve.
Yeah. And I guess this is also a way of preventing yourself from, if you do have investments, you've got an ISA. It does prevent you or allow you to not look into selling those investments to help fund it, because you've already prepared yourself for needing this cash to help with any bills or any other costs and expenditure that you may have in certain months of the year that you know, especially for some months over the year, you know that you're going to have a slightly higher expenditure. You know, you're going on holiday, or you've got a lot of, over the summer holidays, I know a lot of people's expenditure does go up. You know, you're taking the kids out for activities, you're doing days out, you're going to the pub. Everyone's guilty to do that, and everyone should be able to do that comfortably. So the final pillar is capital. How would you describe what entailed capital?
That's a little easier to describe than the second pillar of the income deficit that we talked about. This is just simply planned capital expenditure.
Yep.
Are there things you have to buy or spend your money on that are non-recurring? So we're not talking about recurring items. We're talking about one-offs. So if you've said, I've got to do a new roof on the house, we've got to tile it again, and the quote was £10,000, and I'm going to do that next summer. Back to our, let's look 3 years into the future. If you've got £10,000 expenditure next summer, you probably ought to have that in cash waiting to go out, then invested somewhere in your example of an ISA or wherever that may be. Mm-hmm. Because in a year's time, that investment might have gone down by 10%, 20%, because someone's invaded somewhere else.
Yeah.
Would seemingly no longer surprised by anyone invading another country. But the effect on the market is pronounced. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be risking things for 1, 2, or 3 years, and make sure that capital expenditure, as we call it, lump sum payments that you've got to make are available in a cash, in that final cash pillar.
And do you think, because of obviously how volatile the markets have been recently, that I know some individuals will find just a standard bank account with a semi-decent interest rate is the safest place for it to be. But do you think they should really open their breadth and have a look at the other options available to them apart from just a standard bank account? Like we've mentioned ISAs, you've got general investment accounts. And what is the best way for people to start becoming comfortable looking at these wrappers to place their money into, because they can be just as safe as a standard bank account?
Yes, and that's true, but it all depends on your attitude to risk, you know, what you're prepared to risk over a given period of time. And if you absolutely need £10,000 to be £10,000 in next summer, as we talked about, then other than cash is quite hard. It's quite hard to imagine something other than cash that will absolutely give you £10,000 back. Guaranteed. Guaranteed is not a word that's used very often in the investment world, even with cash, actually, because if you hold a very large amount of cash above the government protection levels and a bank fails, so you think you've got your money with the bank, and because you've just sold a flat or something and you haven't bought the new flat, so there's a large amount sitting there, there are protections around that sort of cash flow around property, but just a large amount of money in cash can mean you're exposed if you're above a certain level. So even banks aren't you can't often say guaranteed unless you're below a certain amount. But there are other investments when you start to move up the risk ladder, and you could only be rung one or rung two on that risk ladder with a tiny change to risk profile, but might generate you a better return over a year or two, particularly if you could tie it up for a year or two. So it's certainly worth looking around, but be completely clear on what the risk to your capital is. That's the most important bit.
And what you need it for, because if you are buying a house within the next year, do you really want to be putting that into the market, or would you rather keep it somewhere safer and easily accessible, so you know you're not getting capital gains tax involved, and it's just a lot easier and quicker for you to access that cash. It's more liquid instead of, you know, tying it up in some investments, because that's another consideration people need to take. And as we've mentioned already, with the cost of living crisis, we've heard a lot of individuals, especially the younger generation, thinking, I don't need to be saving into my pension or anything like that at the moment, and they're not really thinking about their three pillars of cash. But I think it is important, and I think it's important, you know, if you are a parent, to, it's a form of budgeting, and I think it's something that does need to be instilled into the young adults, you know, going to university. You need your three pillars of cash with that, but it's something that you wouldn't have necessarily thought of. So as a parent yourself, how did you maybe explain this to your children?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, because keeping a focus on the medium to long term is quite important. So to cut your pension savings at the current situation with the cost of living crisis, I can understand, but the long term effect of that can be great. It's much better for you to look at some of the other areas you mentioned earlier in the conversation, which is, can I afford my Nike trainers? You know, should I really go out on a Friday night when I could go out Thursday night and get a 30% discount at one of the restaurants? You know, why not celebrate my birthday a day early? You know, there's lots of budgeting tricks that you can come to which will save you quite a lot of money. And being efficient about how you buy food and so on and so forth. There's a lot of tips and hints out there which would stop you having to take away a focus on the medium to long term. You don't have to cut that, because then you're going to have to fix another problem
later
once this is over. Yeah. Whereas if you trim what you're spending, you're going to be in a much better situation.
Okay. And then going back to budgeting with the younger adults, what's the best way to maybe make it interesting? Because I think a lot of the younger generation aren't, then maybe it's a bit intimidating for them to really start thinking about finance and money. Unless you're studying at university, you'll have an insight, but a lot of it is looking at bigger money and not your own, so you're not necessarily going to apply those principles. So do you think there is an easy or an interesting way to get them involved in thinking about this now?
It's a difficult one, because a lot of people have other priorities, you know, and actually looking at budgeting almost sounds like a threat to enjoying yourself. You know, everybody wants to enjoy themselves, but as I sort of was briefly hinting, you can enjoy yourself in different ways and hopefully still have fun, but maybe saving 10, 15, 20% of your budget. That'd be a huge positive. So keeping things simple, having simple foundations for saving is a good way. To know how much you're spending is the first trick. If you know how much you're spending, then you can do something about trimming. If you've no idea, because you've got this blob of money coming in and out, salary comes in, some direct debits go out of your account, you've no idea what you're actually spending as your discretionary spend, as we call it, the bits just you freely spending on top of bills on yourself and family. One good trick is to split, as soon as your money hits your current account, is to move it to a deposit account set up purely for bills.
Yep.
And then to have every single bill you can possibly have as a monthly direct debit, as a monthly direct debit.
Yeah.
And if the total of those bills are £1,100 in your household, you put in £1,100 exactly of your salary into that deposit account, knowing exactly £1,100 will come out. And it will go to zero at the end of every month. And then the next month, the salary goes in and all the direct debits go out. And so you go on. What that means is what's left in your current account is available to you. if you like, your discretionary spend.
Mm-hmm.
If you've overspent, your account will go into overdraft within the month.
Mm-hmm.
You've now got a trigger which tells you you're overspending.
Yeah.
And if you start to hit a nervous point at 14 days into the month, you know you've had a really good 2 weeks, but the next 2 weeks probably should be leaner. And that can be a helpful hand on your shoulder to help you through the maths. If you feel you're less good at budgeting and you find it less interesting, no matter what gimmicks are put in front of you, you won't find it interesting. But there are also some very good budgeting apps out there which will help you and nudge you into being slightly more economical.
Yeah, there definitely is plenty out there for you to have a look at and to actually help. And if we go on to our final kind of discussion point, obviously it's not just a simple, I'm going to have a bank account for this. You need to really plan around your cash and the management around that. And one of the ways that we do that at Clarity to help clients almost visualize what they have, it's very difficult to see the big picture when you're just talking about it, and it's something that I find quite hard to think about different pots of money, but when it's laid out in front of you nicely, it's definitely a lot easier. So one thing obviously we use is our wealth plan tool, and you can have all of your assets on the bank, you can add in bank accounts, and it will give you the visual picture that we use. But from the advisor point of view, when explaining that to clients and how it can be beneficial, how do you direct it and present it to them almost? This is why this is a helpful tool for them.
We present it because essentially what it does is the number crunching that you would possibly find difficult yourself. Some people are very good at Excel spreadsheets, but why invent an Excel spreadsheet when someone's done a probably much more thorough job and knows the tax legislation that surrounds the numbers as well? So essentially, the wealth plan, you don't have to be wealthy to use. You just need to have some assets that are positioned in various places. And you've got some money coming in and some money going out. And you've got a target date that you might retire at, after which you're going to be drawing on your pool of assets. And essentially, it's that. It's a cash flow forecasting tool. You know, will I have enough cash in my account at the right time? And here, cash, we're talking about your total value of everything. Not necessarily in a banking cash, but is there money in the right place at the right time as we go forward? So essentially, basically, what it helps you do is answer questions like this. If I bothered to save £100 a month extra into my pension, how many years earlier could I retire?
Yeah.
Now, that would be nice. Imagine you could put £100 into your pension from the early age of 23. And this is why we say do it as early as possible. And if that meant I could retire a year and a half early, now I'm starting to see the value of that action, which seems a relatively modest amount to get me to retire a year and a half earlier and travel around the world for that period. You know, imagine how much more beneficial that would be. So that's what the wealth planning tool's useful in doing.
Yeah, I know I've certainly used it for advice letters where we are looking at different scenarios. We've had clients that want to model things as simple, like you've said, when can they retire? They just want to see what they've got, how early they can retire, how they could potentially manipulate this to fit what they want. I've seen clients want to do it to model higher interest rates, how that's going to affect their investments, or lower interest rates. Or maybe if I decide to retire much earlier than I'm already thinking about, but your spouse continues working for a longer period of time. And we've also had clients that look at how school fees and university costs can be factored into this. And if I need to add in care costs potentially, because I think this is another factor that a lot of clients and individuals don't realise, that emergency cash pot, that first pillar, will potentially be coming in handy for, because it's not always something that you plan for. So there's definitely a lot of different aspects that a cash planning tool such as our wealth plan can be used for. So I think we've covered all of our bases. In summary, from my point of view, it's the easiest and simple way to view how to budget and just manage your cash without it becoming intimidating. It is something that a lot of clients and advisors discuss as a first point in meetings, I've seen it written down plenty of times. I've reiterated it plenty of times. And it's such a simple concept that it really sticks out. And it's really easy. It's just, if you wanted it to be three bank accounts, emergency, income, and then your capital, if that's how it's easy to picture it, then that's how you need to do it. And if it's for that peace of mind that you want, it's better to plan now than later.
Exactly. And I would just add, don't feel you've missed the boat if you feel, well, I haven't got my cash reserve now because I'd never thought about this before.
Yeah.
How's that going to help me through this crisis of costs going up and so on? Well, what you need to do is build your foundation in those three pillars, the three mm-hmm. pillars of cash, for the next crisis that might occur. And that crisis might be tiny, it might be a curveball, whatever. But you will build your armour ready for those inevitable challenges that we all have through our life and career. So don't, if you feel you're a bit behind now, just allow yourself sensibly to get back on track.
So it's never too late to really think about your cash management.
Never too late.
So that brings us to the end of our episode on Three Pillars of Cash today. If you want to follow us on our socials, we've got a LinkedIn page, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. Please join us next time for our next episode. And thank you for listening.
Thank you and goodbye.